Welcome to the Players World Kitchen podcast, made in Wrexham and brought to you by Oscar Mayer, the Rugby Players Association and Brand Me. My name is Judith Batchelor, and today I have the honour and privilege of talking with women's rugby legend Bryony Cleal about her journey, player pathways to the elite game, teaching, education and much more. There is a lot to unpack in all of that, but we're going to give it our best shot. But before we start, for those of you who don't know Bryony, here is a brief history of her story and many achievements. Bryony began her career at Saracens in 2016. Thanks to strong club performances, she made her England debut in 2019 against Ireland, scoring a try in the same match. She went on to win three Six Nations with the Red Roses, and after winning back-to-back titles with Saracens, she joined Wasps, then moved to Harlequins, and has since returned to Saracens. Bryony also serves as Director of Rugby at the Elite Rugby Academy. Welcome, Bryony.
Thank you for having me.
Obviously, I know you and your work well, but I wondered if you could share with listeners a little bit about how you became involved in rugby in the first place.
Yeah, it was a fair few years ago. I was a young girl in Norwich, in Norfolk, and at my primary school. And I think we were at the after school club and we were a bit unsure of what to do and how to entertain ourselves. And we looked out the window, obviously talking about me and my twin sister Poppy, looked out the window and we saw about 10 boys and one girl out there playing rugby. And she was head to toe caked in mud. And we looked at each other and thought, I think we want to do that. Said to my mother, can we go out and play? Yeah. And she was like, okay. And then my brother went, can I go too? And she was like, okay. So sent us all out there. And I think 2 weeks later, he'd quit because we were better than him already. And we didn't look back. We stayed playing at primary school, obviously up to secondary school, joined a club, and then didn't look back from that moment. My brother never picked up rugby ball again. Just follows our careers other than playing it himself. But we went on and played obviously club rugby now, took professional contract a few years ago. Now I'm starting to get to the end of my rugby career, but obviously playing at Saracens and along the way have kind of fulfilled my dreams as such. I've obviously got many a new dreams as my life goes on, but that rugby career that I dreamed as a young girl is definitely one that I've achieved some goals.
And you talked about the fact that your brother never picked up a rugby ball again, couldn't cope with the competition. Is rugby in your family? Is there a history?
It's not. It's not at all. If you ever saw my mum and dad, you wouldn't believe that me and my sister are a product of them, simply because my mum's about 5'5", and me and my sister are 6 foot, and my dad's probably the same height as us. Dad was a footballer. Mum always told me we got the sporting genes from her and not my dad, which I agree. I probably agree with mum. So yeah. If you're listening, I do agree with you. Definitely picked them up from my mum, but not rugby. I think my mum always said she would like to, but it was never an offering, was it, for her back then? So, but yeah, just happened to be looked out the window one day. And I think it's crazy, isn't it? Because I hadn't seen that one girl play and I probably wouldn't have known that probably was an opportunity
that
for
girls could play rugby.
Absolutely. So I'm thankful whoever that young girl was that here I am.
Oh, I wonder if she knows who she was.
If you're listening.
I was going to say, if you're listening. But I think it's fascinating that obviously you've got to where you've got to. But we're here today in the Players World Kitchen and tomorrow you're going to be cooking. How are you feeling about that? I mean, you're completely different to a ballpark altogether.
Yeah, no, it is. But I don't know, if anyone does know me that's listening, they'll know I like food too. So it's two worlds have collided. But everyone used to go, what's your hobby? And sometimes I'm like, my hobby's going out and eating. Like, I love going around the restaurants in London, especially. And people go, what present do you want? I said, a gift voucher for X, Y, and Z. So it's like two worlds have collided. But I'm gassed to be cooking tomorrow and I've got an absolute smashing menu to cook, and especially I feel like as my food passions are going, I'm definitely in this era that I like to call cooking my meat, which means I like brisket, short ribs, got my Blackstone, thinking about my a smoker to get for the garden. So I'm cooking barbecue pulled pork with pit beans and some greens and some Monterey Jack, so I'm over the moon.
And I'm looking forward to trying it. I say, I can't wait. It looks delicious. And I'm sure that you will be brilliant when you get in the kitchen. We've just talked a bit about your rugby journey. We talked a bit about how you've ended up being here in the Players World Kitchen, cooking your dish for us tomorrow, which we're all looking forward to. But your personal development and learning journey has been quite impressive too. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so again, growing up, wasn't aware that women could be professional rugby players, especially. And my mum was always like, you need to go uni, you need to make sure you've got a degree, you need to make sure, like, I know you love playing rugby, but it's not a career there, which is smart because it's all not, my career's not going to be there forever. So obviously I made sure I was set up and wanted to go into my my career that I thought I was going to have, which was obviously wanted to be a teacher. So I went off to Loughborough and got my undergrad in sports science geography, then realised obviously I wanted to be a teacher for, you know, PE teacher, any sport, give me a ball or a bat and I'll be happy for hours. So then went down to Exeter, did my postgraduate certificate in education. Then I can't leave uni yet. I'm not ready to leave uni yet. Found a bit more of my love for rugby at that stage because I didn't play up at Loughborough. Started back in down at Exeter, did my master's in educational research. And then went into a bit of a career of teaching a couple of years before the England Red Roses contracts came out. So I was definitely invested and intrigued about, like, my educational research was all about socioeconomic backgrounds and how that meant that you engage differently in sport at university or just sport in general. And I guess, yeah, I wanted to make sure, and still am with my involvement in some of the grassroots stuff, about the opportunities and that everyone gets that equal opportunities. And I think being a women's rugby player, even more so.
Yeah. And can you tell me a bit about that research, how you went about it, the sort of methodology for the research? Because it's fascinating.
God, it's a few years ago, Judith. No. Yeah, basically I went down, got a scholarship to go do it about widening participation. So again, socioeconomic background, how that affected how involved you got into university sport, but also just university life. And it was, we just went in and we just researched a load of the students there and came away with some conclusions, basically saying, yeah, if you've come from a lower socioeconomic background, you're less likely to get involved and less likely to be as engaged, being at Exeter, Russell Group University, especially. There was even that barrier for participation or barrier to join clubs just simply from where you came from. And I'm forever thankful for my university experience, for my clubs, for my everything I did there. And imagine if you couldn't do that because of even the money you had available or just your culture, or maybe you didn't realise. And the landscape of women's rugby is changing so much as to who we have playing. Yeah. So 10 years ago, I don't know, you were wearing a hijab, you wouldn't have seen someone at your university. So now we've got people like Zainab Alima, who's flying the flag and doing amazing things and for the sport. So it's crazy how that background changes your experience of uni. So no, it was eye-opening, but from that I went and then taught. I went and taught for a few years down in Crystal Palace. And then, yeah, lo and behold, got an England contract and said goodbye to teaching. Might go back one day.
Yeah. No, and I can relate to that. I did a PGC as well and taught for a while. But going back to your research point, I think it's a really interesting topic because I remember doing some research a while ago now on holiday clubs, sports clubs for teenagers, and the fact that women and girls, as they are, you know, teenage girls, do not take part in those kind of holiday clubs. So there's a real sort of gender imbalance.
Do they not?
No. A lot of it was about trying to find the activities that they would be interested in, because they always felt that was something for the boys and not for girls.
Is that was it their perceptions that they just thought it was
football and other things that boys would feel comfortable doing, and they weren't things. This was a while ago, of course, before the Lionesses came to fame. But yeah, it was a really, really stark problem. And that girls, once they leave active sport in their teens, don't go back to it in later life. So the more you can keep people active and taking part in these things, then the better. And obviously when they go to university. Coming back to food, because And I know it's quite well written that you're a bit of a foodie. Can you tell us a bit about your relationship with food?
Yeah, that's a good reputation to have, I guess, foodie. I like that. Take that with me wherever I go. But I think when I go on Twitter sometimes, and I think I've been tagged in many a tweet back in the day where it's like top five heaviest rugby players, and I'm proud to say I'm number one on that list. Don't know where they got the records from, but there you go. But I guess that means I generally do love my food, and as I've already alluded to, I love going out to eat. I love cooking at home. I love trying new things. So that's always been a bit of a difficult one to manage with being a professional athlete. I want to eat everything that's in sight. I enjoy eating. So quite often when we have our nutritionists talk to us, they talk about like fueling your body for playing or fueling your body for this or that. And I'm thinking, no, I just love the taste of what I'm eating. Yeah, or food. So it's then difficult to change that mindset. And I had to come up with some, quite a few gems throughout the years of when nutrition would come in and be like, this is how many grams of protein you need to be eating for every kg of body weight. It's 3 kg to 3 grams of protein for every kilogram you weigh. And I'm thinking, God, that's a blinking lot of protein. So I was like, I had to go out on the lookout. So one, I love eating a lot of food. So I'm like, okay, I'd go out and go, you know what, I need to eat a lot of food, but as little calories as possible. So I'd bulk buy the 10 calorie jellies, or I'd go to the supermarket and get your protein yogurts. And like, I'd be like, but I want that Rolo yogurt's looking really tasty over there, but I can't have that Rolo yogurt. So I had to go get the two like salted caramel and chocolate protein ones and like mix them half and half, and then they come out of a Rolo
very
yogurt
creative.
And I'm telling you, protein's on ball, tastes great, and I feel like I've conned the system as such. And then so that's what I'd do. I'd come up with a bit of creative ways. Anyone wants to DM me, I'll let you know the most calorie best foods to order from KFC and McDonald's. So you let me know, just take the buns off and you take the calories away. But it'd be things like that where I know that I'd needed to have hit my carbs or my protein, but it was trying to work it out. Going professional when I was 24 meant that people hopefully nowadays learn a lot about their nutrition going into a professional environment when they're in their teens. So already they're creating the building blocks for their future with their nutrition, or whereas we learn it so late because we turned professional so late, the nutritionist came in so late to us. So yeah, I was ended up ordering caviar when I know I had to hit my protein goals, because they're very good for your protein. But yeah, it was a bit odd, to be honest, at times. My housemates would be like, Bri, why is there corned beef and caviar in the fridge? I'd be like, good protein to calorie ratio they are.
Yeah. Well, interesting combinations. But you touched on younger players today being given lots of advice that you wouldn't have had, and nutrition came quite late in the day. But when you think about what is happening now in the elite rugby academy, you know, how different is it from when you started in the game?
Well, miles, absolutely miles different. From the opportunities that girls now get in the game, it's huge, but it's still nowhere replicating the men's game. And that's something, again, with the Elite Rugby Academy, we did look to change as such. For the listeners, I guess, the Elite Rugby Academy is an academy we set up last year to provide opportunities for girls to experience nutrition, S&C, sports psych, coaching at a higher level to prepare them to go professional. Because, sorry, boys, they get it all sometimes, don't they? And it feels like you're a bit jealous of them, but it's not. I don't want to take it away from them. I just want us to have the equal opportunities as they do. And that's why they have a lot of academies or DPPs or pathways a lot earlier than the girls. So it's bridging that gap. And that's what something we try to create. And one of them is that nutrition workshop, getting players to know how important even drinking water is. Obviously eating before games. And when we would look at how much we had to eat the day before a game, it's unbelievable. I would have to be forcing toast down my throat at 10 p.m. at night for a game to hit the amount of carbs needed for my game. And until someone literally sat down and showed me and explained it to me, you think carb load is eating a bowl of pasta. Yeah. And there's so much more to it. So it's how early can we teach these girls, and how early can we give them the building blocks to fulfill their potential. So that's something we did with the Elite Rugby Academy. We do, we offer it for boys and girls, obviously, but I was super passionate about that girls offering to give them, again, the best start we could to fulfill their potentials and to go, even if they don't end up being a Red Rose, it's can we make sure that they get the potential that they have and we're not doing them a disservice?
Yeah, and I think you've touched on a broader point, really. If you look at all of the research that goes into or has gone into elite sport, and it's not just rugby, but all levels of elite sport historically, most of the research and the innovation and, you know, collecting data, looking at scientific research has been done on men and on the men's game, whatever that game might be. And there's very little serious research that goes into elite women athletes and some of the challenges they've got, and whether that's nutrition, whether that's injuries, and all the things that, you know, we know about. So yeah, there's one thing that I feel quite passionately is about is how do we get the right levels of research into the women's game.
I sit here as a two-time ACL tearer, so I know there's so much that people are trying to do around the ACLs and female to male data. So And I think I took it for granted a bit a few years back. And especially now in my role, I do some community outreach down at WASPs with the Elite Rugby Academy. And actually just some of my interactions with people, I probably didn't realise sometimes what the inequality does look like. And sometimes at grassroots, I'm like, at WASPs, I'm just giving you an example here. I really shouldn't have named the club, but sorry, WASPs. Someone said, "Oh, we really need some professional coaches around here," and I just thought,
"Excuse me,
I'm Red Rose Saracens level 3," and he was like, "Oh, really? I didn't know." And I thought, "Yeah, okay." So it's experiences like that remind you on a daily sometimes, and I think wouldn't have expected it sometimes, but yeah, it reminds me that I underestimated that throughout my career.
Well, it's like those questions, isn't it? You have the sort of, you'll talk about something like a director of rugby or a CEO of a club and they'll say, "Oh, what's his name?" And you say, "Oh, it's a she, actually."
Yeah.
There's still lots of, and it's not intentional. It's just, you know, stereotypical views are very hard to break down because they've been around for a long time.
It was only at the weekend someone went, I got tickets to the proper World Cup. And I said, "The proper World Cup? Oh, no, sorry, the Men's World Cup." I thought, "Clark, here we go."
Just trying to wind you up. I know one of the things that we just touched on was about your own sort of learning and personal development. And, you know, it's brilliant that you've committed time to that. And the Rugby Players Association, that's something that we talk about all the time, because you never know when a career might end. It probably won't be when you think it's going to end or when you've planned for it to end. And having that sort of parallel work stream of like gaining qualifications, studying, is really important. But I'm also conscious that for women's game, particularly when a lot of women would have been dual career as well as trying to drive their own learning and development, is really difficult. How did you cope with, you know, being an elite athlete and, you know, investing in your development in the ways that you have done?
My career was not how I set it out to planned it as such. I obviously did my ACL quite early on, so it allowed me to probably not focus on rugby as much and go get my higher education. And then as I went back into rugby, obviously I played at Sarries alongside teaching. And to begin with, it wasn't as difficult because that was when we were transitioning in to be this professional outfit that we are today. It was very much back then professional with the small P as such, because we wanted to be professional, but the funding wasn't there. And now as the years have gone by, obviously I spent 4 of them years with an England contract, and it was from going from an England contract where I was able to recover. I was able to have the time invested in me as a person, i.e. to be able to recover, rest, train in the time, in the days as such, and then still have my free time and that work, and still go to Sarries. And then suddenly when I lost that contract and it was into the big wide world of working again, you're like, damn, how, how does everyone fit this into their days? So I, and again, you underestimate, you don't, you sit next to the girl in the changing rooms, but it's sometimes really hard to understand what they're having to do every day. So as that professional, it was like a slap in the face, I tell you, to go straight into a working world and have to then manage what you're doing before with, well, 12 hours less in a day than you had before, or 8 hours that you're working. So it was a crazy reality of what people had to go through for a long time when we really started going professional. So it's a case of sacrificing every other aspect of your day-to-day life. So
what sort of things?
It's just like friends and family events and parties and plenty of weddings that you, oh, can you come to this when, well, I've got a rugby game on the Sunday. It's not as easy as if you play in a Sunday league that you couldn't go. It's very much you have to be at that every occasion or day you're going to. And especially when you're in, if you're in camp, obviously you couldn't. So it was just about that. And I felt sometimes you do get jealous, don't you? I'm like, God, that person's got a really good social life. Like they're off everywhere, or you couldn't take a holiday when you want to take a holiday. For just their examples, I guess they're like broad range examples, but it's very much when I was juggling that, then I really got the appreciation of what other people have gone through. To have to juggle that every day, because the demands of the clubs are becoming more and more and more. Each player is demanding more and more and more of everybody. And they're like, why don't you know your line out calls, or your 1,200 needs to get better. And you're like, but also I've got the boss on the phone saying, where are you? You've missed this, or you've not sent this email, or you've not replied to this person. So you suddenly get it from all angles. So rather than just have that one focus in life. So it's juggling a lot of plates.
And I think, what you've just summed up there is the fact that it is really difficult and you have to make sacrifices and there are no shortcuts on these things. It is hard work and you've got to be resilient and tenacious and all the things that we know that women rugby players are, because that's how they've got to where they've got to, particularly when you go on to represent your country. But one of the things that I had similar things, nowhere near as tough and difficult as it's been for you, but working in a world where there aren't many women role models, but actually knowing that other women look after you, women helping other women on the journey, as it were. Are the women that have been in your world that have helped you over the years that sort of stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny as well when you mentioned being you coming from a career where you're the only woman or you're paving away. And I sometimes take my hat off to you girls too, because I walk into rooms and if I'm outnumbered, I'm thinking, what do I do? What do I say? Where do I look? And I feel like sometimes I get this realization more and more day to day, but I think, anyone out there that's ever, it's like imposter syndrome sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
You think, what am I doing? I'm in the right room. But I feel like that's where other women have come to be able to support. And I've had some great ones. I've had a lady down at Exeter University, Jo Yap, who's now the Wallaroos head coach. I did my ACL and was unsure about going back to rugby. And Jo definitely took my confidence, my self-confidence, my self-esteem, everything around me believing in myself. And she made me believe in myself again. And she'll probably be sick of me saying it, because I always mention her when anyone asks about it. But then also further on in my career, when I was at Wasps, I moved there and LJ Adams was forwards coach there. And again, empathy, the caring, the player-centered, player-focused was a coaching style that really worked for me. I was definitely one that if you put your arm around me, that's where I thrived the most. And that's just all aspects of life, I think. If all my friends would say that's what I am, kind and caring. Poppy won't tell you, but I was painting the kitchen wall at her house the other day till 1 a.m. because that's how kind and caring I am. Yeah. Couldn't keep my eyes open, but she's got a pink wall now.
I'm sure she's very grateful.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. But they were two coaches that helped me develop as a person as well as a player, I think. Often it's results, or this is what you should be, this kg, or you should run this quick, or you should do that, where it's more as people that they wanted to see you grow and and thrive. So they're two women that definitely helped me foster my passion for rugby, but also develop off the pitch.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it's surrounding yourself with people that bring out the best in you is easy to say and really difficult to do, because they've got to be people that care enough about you to tell you the difficult stuff, but still be there and supportive.
Yeah.
But when you find those people and the kind of the energy givers that they are, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
And I always worry that there'll be many people in life who don't appreciate that because they've never had that kind of relationship with coaches, bosses, mentors. But when you do have it, it's very special. I had a woman who looked after me years ago when I worked at Marks & Spencer, and I credit her with everything.
Yeah,
because she just looked out for me when other people didn't. And you just, you need to find those people.
I do not think people sometimes realise the effects they can have on other people. And especially in rugby, sometimes what happens in a changing room is just as important as how a team plays. So it's, are the people that are in the changing rooms ones that are going to bring people up with them? Are they going to like drag them to not only the standards, but like the social, benefits, or this, like, are they going to drag them up so they're all empowered? They all have got such self-belief that they've all, because that will send people to limits that they didn't know they had. And I feel for people that don't find sport, for me, because I'm just so passionate about sport and team sport especially, but still individual sport can still have the same community feel. And if anyone out there hasn't found it yet, join a rugby club.
Well, on so many levels, that is brilliant advice. But I always laugh actually, because I always remember the 2003, the men's squad, when they won the World Cup, talking about the fact that they got rid of all the energy sappers in the group, but because everybody knew who they were. It was no secret. And when they went, the energy level of the group, the belief in the group went up. And you just need to make sure you are surrounding yourself by those people rather than the energy sappers. But I think that bit about when you experience it, it's very special and everybody raises their game. That is a bit about, you know, hanging out with all the smart people who are looking for new ideas, being resourceful, being innovative in what they're doing. And I just wonder whether, you know, particularly in the women's game where you have to be resourceful because, you know, you don't have the resources that men's game have. Are there any examples of where you think, gosh, you know what, we've ended up doing something that is really innovative, groundbreaking, really special because we've had to be creative, we've had to be resourceful?
You know what? There's a few things I've done in my rugby career, and a couple of them have brought a team close together. And this one brought a team very close together. If anyone's ever played for WASC, they'll know that WASC is not a rugby club, but sometimes is such a family. And a few years back, I was sleeping under a basher. So it's what, like just a piece of material on a tree root in an Exeter Forest the day before playing Exeter at Sandy Park. And I thought, as I lied there, I thought, what the heck am I doing here? Like, I thought, is this time to retire? I think I might have to leave this sport if this is what I've got to do. But we all woke up, couldn't move. And then before that, I'd been crawling through a bush with army paint on my face, pretending to shoot someone. Went to bed, woke up, couldn't blooming move. Went down to Exeter to play the Chiefs at Sandy Park. It was a pre-season friendly. We played, we won. I've never made 15 closer friends in that moment, or I think there was 30 of us there. I think that evening I was on a pirate ship down the road near Topsham or somewhere like this, singing pirate shanties. And I thought, what are we doing? And I've never had a closer team than that one, than when we went and slept under a basher and sang pirate shanties on a pirate ship. So we keep talking about, I think, community and the people around you, but you've also got to put time and effort into them relationships for them to flourish. And although I could have sworn a lot on the bus journey down to Exeter, there was no swearing on the bus journey back because it really brought us together. And just things like that, and nothing groundbreaking, but things we've had to do differently. I know that the men, sorry, Saracen's men have got many a picture of them on a trip to Vienna or Austria or Portugal having a good training and a bonding session over there, but not us. I was face down in some mud in Exeter.
Good for you. Good for you. I suppose that I... Where do you go next with this conversation? There's so much that I could talk to you about. But I suppose if you were looking back and giving advice to younger players today, they're not going to experience the things that you've just described because the game has moved on, thank goodness. But how do you advise young players now? Because part of that sort of adversity that you went through has made you the player that you are today. And how do you capture the best of that whilst, you know, helping things move on?
That, again, looking back, what I want to give to the younger girls in the game now is, one, an understanding that being a professional athlete's super attainable. Two, that the building blocks for a career start when you want them to start, basically. Don't wait till you're 20, don't wait till you're 18, when you're in a club or here or there. We can all develop to be, well, one, great people make great rugby players. Two, the building blocks of what you do as you grow up or the lifestyle changes or you make regarding food, hydration, sleep, help you be, one, a better person, and two, therefore a better player. But the other one is just that self-belief, that confidence that everyone says it, don't let anyone dim your light. And there's been Joe Yap, LJ Adams never let me dim my light. They let me probably be too bright at times, but you'll get people on the way that want to do that. Them energy sappers. We don't want them. We want the people that want you to do well. And it's about, finding them as early as possible. But again, we say that and that sounds all flowery and, oh, that's easy, isn't it? I find my people and I work hard early, but no one's journey or career is straightforward. There's going to be obstacles. There's going to be obstacles, people, injury. I think my first England cap, obviously, was out in Ireland, played, and it wasn't a year and a bit later for my second one because the game after that, I broke my leg. So it took me, and it wasn't a simple break. It took me over 12 months to come back from that. And you always question whether that's then believable that you'd play again. Who came into my life before the first one? Joe Yap. Before the second one, LJ. So they really took me from a place where I didn't believe things would happen for me or I didn't have that self-confidence to them going, no, look, you're super talented. You're going to make it. This is what you got to do. So it's making sure people or the obstacles that you face, the right people around you to help you smash through them because nothing's going to be easy if you dream big, you know, because big dreams are not everyone gets to them.
Yeah. But if you don't aim high, you never know, do you? And I'm always struck by the people that don't fulfill their potential, that have had those opportunities and have seemed to be a bright light, but never quite make it. But you have, but you're still relatively young. So what else is on your aim high list?
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Like, last year, I remember not getting into, was in the England World Cup training squad for the summer and the selection was made and I got the phone call saying you weren't. And on the phone call, he said, oh, you, there's bigger things in life than rugby. And I always thought, yeah, good one. I thought, you're trying to make you feel better as I got this awful news. But then years go on, I thought, God, he was right, wasn't he? There are bigger things to life than rugby. And then my goals changed, family or I got married last year. That, if you want to see a good group of people around me, that was 70 of us in Crete in June. That's a good group of people. There was no energy sappers. But no, and then I thought about, and then my passion is still rugby, and that's within coaching. Now I coach grassroots down at Wasps, obviously involved in the Elite Rugby Academy. Going forward, I always said, I don't want to say this on microphone in case it never happens, but I always said I wanted to coach France because they're a very good, an exceptional group of athletes. But I've always felt they've been lacking in the coaching department. So I always thought, if I learn a bit of bonjour, ça va, I go.
Well, stranger things have happened.
But I always want to, and I do think that. So I'm obviously coaching the community game now, do the Elite Rugby Academy. But one thing I'm super passionate and want to do in the future is go into elite coaching. And yeah, I might have not gone to that World Cup as a player, but maybe as a coach one day.
And how would that pathway work, you know, if you were to map it out? And I know nothing's perfect and these things don't happen in the way that you ever imagine them, but what would be next for you?
For me, I think I've got to finish my playing career. Not ready just yet to hang up the boots. Got a few props that they get better as their age gets older, apparently.
Mature with age.
Yeah, I'm yet to see it, but there we go. But no, I will retire, then go into a coaching role. I want to go into the men's game, to be honest, to start with. I visited Ulster, flew over there and visited their coaching setup. Probably do a few more of that. So use my contacts to maybe go and observe a few. But at the moment, I think go into the men's game at a certain level and then look to coach in our PWR.
Yeah.
Hopefully in a few years, once I've got... I'm level 3 at the moment, so level 4, once I've got that done, go in, hopefully do some of that, then... forwards coach, who knows, any good jobs out there, let me know, and then do a few years of that and then see where it goes. But I think that'd be the route. And again, every year I see less women coaching in the PWR. Every year it seems to get less and less. So, and like I said, Joe Yap and LJ were two coaches that inspired me. So can I be that person for somebody? Would be amazing, would be unbelievable if I could, because I feel... that takes a special person to be able to give someone their self-belief back.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think that's the future. So yeah, in 2 years' time, if anyone's got a forwards coach job, I'll have it.
Well, I expect there'll be a long list of people waiting to employ you, because I think, there is nothing better than somebody who has lived through difficult times, come out the other side with a smile on their face and can share those experiences with other people. Because there's one thing from an academic point of view, being able to coach and mentor people. There's another thing altogether, having lived through it yourself and being there to tell the tale. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's a really powerful story. And we could talk a lot more about lots of things, and I'm just conscious of the time. And I suppose, is there something that I haven't asked you that you would want to talk about that you'd like to share with people?
We've gone through a lot, haven't we? We've covered a lot, but I think I'd be amiss of me to sit here probably coaching that grassroots and probably not just touch, I guess, on how valuable that is an aspect of women's rugby, especially. I love the fact that our crowds are so different, so diverse, and the fact that come September, hopefully, we're going to attract a lot of traction on and off the rugby pitch. It's amazing. Every Sunday I go down there and we watch our club, Wasp, play at various clubs around London. But the community of rugby and women's rugby is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful I looked out that window when I was 6 years old and found it. And even now, I'm so thankful I'm still able to be involved in it. So... I would be amiss not to give the Wasps women a shout out. But definitely, if anyone's listening to this and they just clicked on it because they thought we're going to talk about food, join your local rugby club.
That's a very, very good message, and I'm glad I asked you that question. And to bring it back to food, finally, not quite desert island discs, but you're about to be marooned on a desert island. What's your perfect 3-course meal and drink to take with you?
This is a difficult question.
This
is torture.
Yeah, too many choices.
I know. The thing is, I can eat a lot. We know this. And I thought about this. And I love starters. I love chicken wings, buffalo sauce, little blue cheese dip could be number one. But I think it's being overtaken by sashimi.
Oh,
I love salmon sashimi. Oh, so I reckon 5 slices with a bit of soy sauce on the side.
And wasabi?
No,
wasabi.
Yeah, okay. Don't need no palate cleanser, nothing, no ginger, nothing. Then I'm going, this is hard. Because you could go, I'm a sucker for a Sunday roast. If there's a, I drive past a pub and it says Sunday roast, I'm pulling in. But then I can't shy away from a bit of a fave of mine, sausage and mash. Right, I'm going like Cumberland, proper butcher sausages.
Chunky bits of meat.
Oh, yeah. Creamy mash, gravy, onions. Don't need no veg. Then we're going probably like four sausages as well. Then for dessert, and this might be a bit rogue, cheese board. Okay, I'm talking Brie, Stilton, you know, cheddar don't make the cut.
Yeah.
Any, nothing like that. I can have a bit of camembert on there if it's baked. I don't know if you can do that on a desert island, but if it's baked, bit of camembert, goat cheese, yes, you're in. And then to pair it.
All that protein.
Yeah, I need to be really bulky on this desert island. Then to bring it all together, and if anyone comes at me for saying this wrong, this is just how I've said it all my life. I'm having a nice bottle of Chateauneuf de Pape to finish it off, wash it down, and then I'm swimming back to the mainland.
That is brilliant. I am really, really grateful to you joining us here today, Bryony. You've been very generous in sharing your stories and your backgrounds, and I know that our listeners will love to hear what you've had to say. And yeah, good luck in the kitchen tomorrow. We'll be watching with interest, I'm sure. And good luck with the next stage of your life. You've got loads ahead of you, and we wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you.
If you have enjoyed this discussion, and we hope that you have, then please join us in a week's time to hear more from our cooking guests. Until then, goodbye now from both of us here in Wrexham.